Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. Today, we have one heck of an episode. Before we get into that episode, I want to thank you all for sharing us with your friends and family. We've exceeded the 750,000 listener mark, and we're very excited. It still keeps growing, and we don't know why, but we thank you for that. Thank you for sharing us with everybody. Today, we're talking about student loan debt. Currently, there's over 43.4 million borrowers with federal student loan debt. And that totals over $1.63 trillion as of September of this year. Turns out less than 1% of our student loan debt is in default. And the Biden administration has been able to reduce some student loan debt, especially for those people who signed up with those companies that were supposed to train, but they got not a real degree, or the school went bankrupt. So they forgave that debt, which is rightly so. We have an expert here from Wallet Hub. Her name is Cassandra Happy. She's a consumer finance expert, financial literacy advocate with 15 years experience in the credit union industry. And she's here to walk us through what's going on with student loan debt, with some of these students have large payments. I know my daughter just finished with her bachelor's and her master's. That's a $50,000 debt. And her first bill was $600. And thank God she's got a job. But that's a lot larger than she thought. Cassandra, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Could you give our audience an overview of what's kind of going on with the student loan industry? Now, everybody knows that nowadays when people go to college, colleges is really expensive. So most people can't afford to just write a check. So they have to borrow in order to get in school. But once somebody goes through getting their degree, then, you know, at a certain point, they're going to have to start making payments. Is that correct?
Yes. Usually there's a period of time, about 6 months, between when you graduate and when your payments typically start.
And then when they start, basically, student loans are looking at what? They're looking at my daughter's is a 10-year type situation. You can actually go longer. They can have higher payments, lower payments. How does that work?
Yeah, it really just depends upon what kind of plan you get into with your student loan provider. That's the key thing now, is to look at the different plans that are available and see what's going to work best for your budget.
I know there's a study here with the states that have the highest student loan payments. And I see Maryland's on top, then Vermont, then Hawaii, Massachusetts, New Hampshire. There's a lot of East Coast states other than Hawaii that are in the top 10 there. Is there a reason why those states have larger payments? Is it just because the college system's more expensive there, or students take on more debt, or is there any rationale behind that?
I think a big part of it is just that students are taking on more debt, and it just happens to be kind of concentrated in that area. I think it's important to note that, you know, a lot of people go to school out of state from where they live. So even though we're seeing kind of that concentration on the East Coast, I don't think it's necessarily indicative of anything in particular, because they could have taken on that debt, you know, on the West Coast or in the Midwest. So it really isn't indicative to, you know, it costs more to go to school here. It's just these people are more likely to struggle now that that moratorium's ended.
So I was just thinking about that because we're in California and my son went to a California college. And my daughter went to a college out of state, and the out-of-state tuition is almost twice what the in-state tuition is for California. So I can see where the amount of debt that can be built up, if especially if you're going to school out of state, it can be much more significant. And I think that's obviously a choice that people want to make, but it's something to look at when you're looking to finance college, because it's nice to get all the money up front, but when you have to start paying for it, it's a different story.
Right. And as you said, you know, the in-state and out-of-state tuition is an important thing to keep in mind out of the gate when you're looking at your different options. If you can get the degree that you want from a reputable college that's in-state, usually it's going to save you a pretty penny.
What I'd like to do is just start talking about some of the things that people with student loans can do to start paying off the student debt faster.
Well, as I mentioned, you know, it's important to really look at your options. If you're looking to pay it off faster, there's options typically available. It just depends upon the student loan provider. But just keep in mind that that's going to be typically more out of pocket today, but it's going to save you in the long run.
Okay, so when you talk about saving in the long run, if you take a look at it, it's just basic compound interest. So what are the typical interest rates a student would be paying nowadays for a student loan?
That is a great question. I don't have that in front of me at the moment.
Yeah, because it's real interesting, because I was just looking over this with my daughter, and she actually got her master's in May of this year. And some of the loans that she has, the interest rate's like 2.7, some's at 5.7, some's at 7.7. So they're kind of all over the place. And then, this is from experience. And then she looked at consolidating everything, and the average rate is like 5.7. And with that consolidation, they will adjust the payments, but it's hard to figure out what's the best way to go. But when, like you said, the shorter you pay it off, the better, because you're going to pay less interest. Because I was looking at the interest, if she pays it off in 10 years, she's paying about $20,000 of interest. But if she pays it off over a longer period of time with a lower payment, she's actually paying three times that much in interest. So it gets really, 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 you know, makes it much harder, so to speak.
Yeah, it gets tricky, especially with those student loans, because, you know, typically a student will take on multiple loans. And then you've got, as you said, multiple balances and multiple interest rates that are coming into play. There's some great tools out there that can help navigate that for your specific situation. WalletHub has a student loan calculator that you can use to kind of walk through those different scenarios and see what would be the better option.
Hear that, folks? You can go to WalletHub. They have a student loan calculator to help you walk through the different options. So that's something. You know what? I know our average listener is between 45 and 65, but many of our listeners have children. They're in college age. They're getting out of college. You know what? Being able to find a calculator that can walk them through the different options would be very, very significant. And if you want to do that, just go to WalletHub and look for the student loan calculator. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mark, Cassandra Hoppe here and WalletHub on Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
With Steve. Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I just want to share with you all the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Also, hey, follow us on Facebook. You can join the Saving with Steve Sexton Insiders Club, or you can get all the replays, guest gifts, look at all the behind-the-scenes stuff, and all that. And with that, I want to bring back Cassie here. Cassie here is again with Wallet Hub. One of the things I'd like to do talk about this, the second segment, Cassie, is this. There's a number of tips that you have put out for paying off your student loan debt faster. And, you know, I'd love to just, you know, walk through them. The first one's make a budget.
Yes, making a budget. That's a great place to start. Really take a look at where you're spending your money and see where you can cut back in order to afford that payment and potentially make larger payments to pay that down faster. Once you have that plan in place, it's important to try to follow it as best as you can and then review it periodically for any additional cost-cutting opportunities. Things change and it's important to keep looking back at that. And another thing that you can do to help balance that budget and pay down the loans quicker is try to increase your income. You can look into some additional cash flow with like a part-time job or a side hustle. You can, you know, drive for Lyft or Uber or do like Uber Eats deliveries just to get a little extra funds coming in. Or you could just consider a different job altogether if you have the opportunity to. You could potentially find a job that pays better.
That's great. Now, what about, you know what, research loan forgiveness and repayment programs? I think a lot of people don't really pay attention to that or don't know.
Yeah, there's some great programs available, you know, on, I believe, both state and federal levels for certain professionals in certain professions, such as like teachers and doctors, nurses and other medical professionals. They can qualify for unique forgiveness programs for going into that profession. I've heard of this for teachers. My sister was going to school to be a teacher, and she was able to get a good amount of her student loans forgiven because she was going into that field.
My understanding is it also works for charitable organizations that actually have a 501c3 as well. And that's pretty nice. What about checking with your employer?
So if you're, especially if you're a non-traditional student, you know, going back for your degree later in your career, some employers offer perks to employees who further their education. They might offer tuition reimbursement or even just some sort of reimbursement for books and things like that. So it's important to see if your employer offers anything that can help cut down on those costs.
Well, in addition to that, most recently with the Biden administration, they passed the ability with, I think it was the Secure Act 2.0, and I might have the act wrong, but in 2024, employers, if your employer offers it, it'll give you the opportunity to, besides contributing to your 401k, you can contribute to use the same money that goes on a tax-deferred basis to pay off your student loan. And they give the opportunity for the employer to match what you're putting in there or match a certain portion of it. My daughter's looking into that for her company and as a way to reduce it. Now, one of the things that's really nice about that is if you're contributing to it and it's going straight to college, you can do it almost on a tax-free basis, which reduces the ability for you to pay taxes on it now, which is wonderful. So that's something else to check out. Now, you did talk about checking with your employer. What about, you know, the big thing about making payments on time? How really important that is that?
On-time payments are very important, especially when you consider you have the compounding interest that comes into play. So if you, the longer you have that balance, the more interest is going to compound on that and just keep adding to the balance, even though you're paying it down as well. It just makes it more difficult to keep on that downward track with that balance. And fees. Fees are just unnecessary expenses at that point. If you can make the payment on time, it's always best to do that to avoid a fee that, you know, that's just money coming out of your pocket.
Now, what about, refinancing student debt? What's the tips for actually doing this? How should people go about doing that? Because there's a lot of, a lot of people look into this and sometimes they go to places that charge them a fee and it's not really all, they don't get that great of a deal that they thought they were getting. So could you help with some understanding of how this works and what people's options are?
So as far as refinancing student debt, this is really geared towards looking kind of outside of the student loan debt or the student loan sphere. There's other loan options available where you could potentially refinance for as low as 0%, depending upon the balance you're talking about. If it's someone that has a smaller student loan balance, moving that to like a 0% intro APR credit card eliminates that interest that they would be getting charged. So in the long run, that's a much better deal. And there's other options too, you know, depending upon where rates are, that's the biggest thing. You can always look at doing a secured loan using a different piece of collateral that you don't currently have a loan out against. So if you have a car that has some equity in it, you could potentially use that as the collateral to take out a loan at a lower rate if the rate, the current rate is lower than what you'd be paying on the student loan. So it's kind of shopping around at that point to see what other loan options are available to potentially refinance.
Now, here's the next question, and it's one that's come from our listeners. There are students that have gotten laid off. They're, you know, not in the best financial situation. Is there options like forbearance or anything like that that students can go back and talk to the student loan providers and possibly not have to make a payment for a specific period of time and then start payments up again. Is that something that's available there?
Yeah, typically there are options, and I definitely encourage people to have those conversations with your student loan provider or any lender. If you get into a sticky financial spot, most lenders will work with you and potentially, go into forbearance or just defer your payments for a few months so you don't have to worry about that additional payment while you're getting back on your feet. So communication is really key. You know, it's not a fun conversation to have, but in the long run, it will end up saving you if you have the conversation as soon as you start having issues.
And I agree with you. The key is to have that communication as soon as possible so you don't have to stress about it and you can work out a payment plan. You know, and I think they do a good job with that, especially since right now there's only 1% that are in default or delinquency. So that means the student loans, they really work with you. So make sure you take that step and don't feel like you can't talk to somebody. Now, Cassie, I want to thank you for being here today, shedding light on the student loan situation and what students can do or people who are in the workforce that had a student loan for a long time. And I want to thank WalletHub for providing the information, because without it, you know what, people wouldn't know. So again, I want to thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise. Is there, where can people go? Is it just wallethub.com that people go to?
Yes, head over to wallethub.com. We have a lot of great resources, information out there that you can reference. But also, if you're looking to potentially improve your financial situation, you can always sign up for a WalletHub account and take advantage of the free credit monitoring. We check scores daily and update them. So it's a great tool if you're trying to get your finances on track.
Cassie, thanks for being with us today. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season, and we'll look forward to seeing you again sometime.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing us with your friends and family. Today's segment, or this one, we're going to talk about planning distributions. Okay, folks, again, it's that time of year. We're all getting ready for family time, holiday time, spending time with ones we love. Then, of course, those things are going to get going around with the big day. Always taxes is jumping up. Like I say every year, when it comes to tax planning, so many people, you know what, look at this and do this in a rearview mirror planning. You know what, we always look in the past. And when we're always looking in the past, the thing we need to do is, I want to encourage you, each and every one of you, to start doing your tax planning and look it into the future. So for example, when it comes to distributions, it comes down to the type of account you have and in place and how much money you need to pull from these accounts. So let's take a look. According to Secure Act, changed a few things when it comes to the required minimum distributions that you're going to have to take. Those minimum distributions have pushed the starting age from 72, now it's 73, and in 2030, it'll be 75. So one of the things thing is when we want to talk about the required minimum distributions, they're called aggregation rules, because it's the area that there's a lot of confusion. What can be commingled, what can't be commingled, and things like that. So let's take a look at where aggregation is. When it comes to qualified plans, and when I say qualified plans, I'm like the IRAs, the 401ks, the 403bs, the 457s, the thrift savings plans. Those are the type of things that we're talking about right now. And okay, and the IRS is very, very clear on what they say you can commingle and what you have to take separately. So what I mean by this is if, you know, when it comes to the required minimum distribution, the IRS says you have to take out so much money. Okay. And if you have a 401k and you're 73, a 457, a 403b, a TSA, a TSP, or a KEO, you must take out that required minimum distribution separately from each one of those accounts. So for example, let's say you have $200,000, $100,000 in a 401k, and $100,000 in a 457. The IRS says that you have to calculate your required minimum distribution out of the 401k and take it separately. And you have to take out the, you have to calculate it separately in the 457 and take it out separately. If you don't, you get hit with that 25% tax penalty. It's critical that you understand this. This is the reason why there's so much confusion. And I just think it's another way for the, you know, the federal government to hit you with a gotcha. So, you know, and on top of that, when it comes to these things called qualified charitable distributions, a lot of people, when they start taking their required minimum distribution or, you know, when they get over 70 and all that stuff, and they have to take the required minimum distributions, they'll say, hey, I don't need it. So, you know, maybe I should give it off to a charity. And, you know, let's say they have to take out $20,000 for the required minimum distribution. Okay, no problem. They got to take out $20,000. And but they only need $10,000 to spend. So the other $10,000, they'll have their custodian send it directly to that 501c3 charity. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. And what'll happen is the money that goes to the charity, you don't even get taxed on. If you have a $20,000 required minimum distribution and $10,000 goes to charity, you're only getting a 1099 for $10,000. And you know what? And the other thing that you want to take a look at is things like this. Net unrealized appreciation. Say if you work for the Ford Motor Company and you bought Ford stock in your IRA and place it in there, and kept growing it and growing it and growing it. When you separate from the company or turn 59 and a half, you have the opportunity to use what's called net unrealized appreciation. And what that means is this. Say you paid $100 for that Ford stock when you bought it, okay? And that value of that account has doubled since you've had it. And you're ready to use net unrealized appreciation. And here's the way that works. That net unrealized appreciation works this way, where you take out the whole amount, all the shares of stock, but you're only paying tax on a capital gains end for the appreciation. So that means you're getting $200,000, but you're only paying tax capital gains rates on $100,000, that's the appreciation. Now, if you don't, if you miss those windows when you separate from the company when you're 59 and a half, what will happen is you've got that $200,000 sitting in your IRA. And you know what? If you withdraw it, you're going to have to pay tax at ordinary income rates on $200,000. So it's a wonderful way to save you a ton of money. It's one of those things that's often overlooked. So you want to talk to your CPA, your advisor, and so on to make sure you can have the opportunity to do that. You know, folks, I want to thank you for joining us here today on Saving with Steve. Stay safe, stay healthy, have a happy holiday season, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.